Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking on a really unsettling and frankly controversial stack of source material. These sources, they don't just look at the Israeli-Hamas conflict through the usual geopolitical lens. They actually connect the modern war to, well, ancient spiritual practices, specifically this idea of child sacrifice.
That's right. And our job here is really to guide you through this this pretty complex web of claims. The sources, they weave together deep biblical history, political theory, and, yeah, a deeply provocative argument.
Right.
To talk about what they call the sacrificial rite of offering children, suggesting it's kind of driving the whole current conflict.
The absolute center of this whole thesis is this ancient Canaanite figure, Moloch. So we're going to unpack what the sources say Moloch is, these really astonishing claims about its spirit operating today.
Yeah, today.
And their, honestly, brutal assessment that the political strategy over there is actually centered on deliberately weaponizing civilian suffering, monetizing it even.
It's a challenging deep dive.
Yeah.
Because the authors are just relentless in how they connect things. They argue the tragedy we see isn't just happening, it's, well, manufactured.
Manufactured.
Yeah, like a grotesque economy built on valuing and then sacrificing human life for political and financial gain. So to really get our heads around this framework, we have to start where the sources do, way back in antiquity.
Okay, let's dig into that foundational claim then. What is Moloch? And what's the basis for even making this comparison? The source material definitely doesn't pull any punches. It opens with these stark references like Jeremiah 7.3031,
right,
condemning those who built high places of Topheth to burn their sons and daughters in the fire. Pretty intense stuff.
It is. Moloch, or Molech, you see different spellings, is defined historically as a Canaanite god.
Mm.
And the sources claim its worship was, well, sometimes argued to have happened right in the Gaza region historically.
Mm-hmm.
The classic, really horrifying description referenced in the sources is this seated idol, kind of human-like, but often with a bull's head, and these outstretched arms.
Okay.
And these arms, they claim, were designed to receive babies who were then placed inside the idol's heated core, essentially burned alive.
Wow. That's just horrific imagery. And the sources stress this wasn't like random cruelty. It had a purpose.
Right. Yeah.
Transactional.
Exactly. Pragmatic, even. People were seeking favors.
Wow.
Wealth, health, you know, prosperity, or, and this is crucial for this discussion, to win a war.
Right, winning a war.
They also point out a linguistic thing, noting the Hebrew root emelki is somehow related to the idea of sacrifice.
Interesting.
And, you know, that this practice got the strongest condemnation in the ancient Jewish texts, especially Leviticus. But here's where the sources take a really sharp, almost theological turn. It goes beyond just history.
Okay, this is where we need to maybe slow down a bit, because the claim here is huge. The sources argue this blood sacrifice thing was tied directly to, well, Lucifer's plan to actively stop God's whole plan of redemption. How do they even build that case?
It's pretty complex. They argue the spiritual driver behind Moloch worship was to actually defile the human line. According to the source material, the idea was kind of twofold.
Okay.
Either through like possession of the human worshiper, or sometimes by a high priest having relations with fallen angels or fallen angels with Vestal virgins, to create this specific hybrid population. They call them hybrids.
Hybrid. And what was the point of creating this hybrid population according to these sources?
The goal, they claim, was existential, like fundamental. By corrupting the bloodline, making humans spiritually no longer human, this would make them, in the sources view, unsavable by Jesus's eventual incarnation.
Yeah.
Because he was meant to die for the sins of humanity.
I see.
If humanity was fundamentally changed, corrupted, they'd be beyond saving. And the pure, innocent blood of babies, specifically, was seen as the most potent source of ritual energy for this whole dark purpose.
So the argument is this wasn't just morally wrong. It was a direct strategic attack on the entire spiritual story of existence. That kind of sets the theological stage for everything else they argue then.
It really does. It frames child sacrifice not just as some historical mistake, but as the central spiritual battle throughout history. And that lets them pivot pretty seamlessly, actually, from ancient history to argue that this spirit of Moloch is, quote, alive and well today.
Okay, let's talk about that pivot because it starts, surprisingly, in the West before it even gets to the Middle East. And it draws this incredibly controversial comparison.
Yeah, it takes their whole argument about ritual blood sacrifice and applies it straight to modern Western practices. The material explicitly cites the estimate that since Roe versus Wade in 1973 in the U.S., something like 70 million babies have been aborted or terminated.
70 million, wow.
And the analysis calls this practice murder. It asks if the sources use the Tetragrammaton, why HVH will judge the USA and the West for, quote, the murder of millions of the innocent, just like the ancient Canaanites were judged for what they did at Topheth.
So the sources use that huge number, 70 million, to argue that this sin, blood sacrifice, is basically everywhere, global, proving the ancient spirit is still active.
Exactly.
Right.
It really sets the stage for their specific focus on the Israeli-Hamas war. And from there, the focus tightens. They bring in the political scientist Maral Salmasi, who, according to sources, talks about an unspoken and unreported domineer regarding the Palestinians. And this just shifts the whole discussion from theology in the West to direct geopolitical claims about weaponizing tragedy.
Okay, so we've got the ancient theological motive established, but how do the sources argue this very specific spirit of Moloch translates into actual, like, measurable political strategy in Gaza today? Let's start with that accusation they make of Arab hypocrisy.
Right. The sources see this as the absolute linchpin of the political argument. They point out that none of the nearby Arab countries, including Egypt, which has really tightened its borders, seem willing to take in Gazans, not even temporarily, despite the obvious humanitarian crisis.
And their interpretation of why they refuse isn't just incompetence or lack of will. It's deliberate strategy. This is the weaponization thesis, right?
It is. The sources argue pretty bluntly that the Islamic world never actually intended to solve the Palestinian issue. They claim it was created and it's maintained specifically to weaponize it against Israel.
How so?
By refusing to absorb refugees, Arab regimes intentionally keep the Palestinian population stateless and disenfranchised by design. That's the phrase they use.
Okay, but why? Why is a stateless, desperate population seen as more valuable?
Because, according to this view, it serves as a permanent thorn in Israel's side. It constantly generates media attention, global pressure, condemnation against Israel. And this leads straight into what the sources call the grotesque economy.
Let's pause on that financial claim. Because if that's what they're saying, it really reframes every headline you read. What exactly is the source material claiming about monetizing suffering?
The core argument is basically this: the perpetual suffering generates massive international sympathy, which then makes it easier to siphon off Western taxpayer money, mainly through organizations like UNRWA, straight into the pockets of groups like Hamas and the PLO.
So the organizations are incentivized to keep the crisis going.
That's the claim. They're financially incentivized to maintain, even exaggerate, the crisis.
So just to be crystal clear, the authors are arguing that refusing to help the refugees isn't just politically useful, it's a deliberate financial strategy where dead bodies are quite literally the currency.
In their words, yes, absolutely. Dead Palestinians are the currency. That's the term they use. Spend for headlines, for sympathy, for foreign aid. This leads them to a really harsh conclusion, that the suffering isn't just imposed from outside, but also, in a way, chosen.
Chosen.
Chosen by the Palestinian leadership and, by extension, the population that elected Hamas, a group the sources explicitly call a genocidal death cult that glorifies child sacrifice.
Wow. Okay, that brings us to this idea of the cult of blood and martyrdom. How do the sources detail the evolution of this ideology?
They trace it back even before Hamas. They note that the PLO under Yasser Arafat already cultivated what they call a quasi-religious cult of blood.
Okay.
In that system, children's deaths weren't seen as tragedies to avoid, but almost as proof of commitment, the core idea being that martyrdom is nobler than coexistence.
And Hamas just took that and ran with it. How did they codify it?
The sources claim Hamas basically systematized it. Civilians are intentionally used as human shields. That specific term is used to inflate casualty numbers. Funerals become PR spectacles for the international media. The strategy, as described, is to provoke massive retaliation from Israel, specifically to engineer those civilian casualties that fuel the political economy and reinforce this whole cult of martyrdom.
This is really the ultimate chilling summary from the sources, isn't it? That an entire generation has been, quote, offered up to Moloch, an ancient god of child sacrifice, now rebranded as resistance. And in this system, they describe progress is treason and compromise is sin. Just Wow.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the sources argue this dynamic proves the conflict is fundamentally an ancient religious war, not just, you know, a modern fight over land.
Right.
And they also argue that this practice of sacrifice using children for political gain is allegedly not limited to just one side of the conflict.
That's a really significant complication the sources bring in. They do take a moment to note the argument that Israel has also historically used its children, or the image of its children, for sympathy and political leverage.
Mm-hmm.
But then they introduce this absolutely shocking claim about the operational decisions around the October 7th, 2023 attacks.
Yeah, this is one of the most provocative parts of the source material.
Yeah.
They cite what they call credible evidence by many IDF soldiers, suggesting an order to stand down was given on October 7th.
The stand down order.
Leading to delays in the response that allowed the atrocities to happen. The author, who's identified as a former SAR-L participant, someone who volunteered with the IDF,
okay,
analyzes this failure and basically assesses it as either the most disastrous mistake imaginable or a calculated child sacrifice made within Israel itself, the worst since World War II.
That alleged stand down feeds right back into the source's main point.
Yeah.
That this whole thing is an ancient religious war over the biblical birthright, the promised land, Jerusalem, and that both sides are potentially caught in this sin of sacrifice.
Exactly. And the sources make sure to note that historically, the Jewish people weren't exempt from divine judgment over Moloch worship either. They cite King Manasseh putting his own children through the fire. And they point out this practice was a direct reason given for the Jews being expelled from the promised land back then. It's presented as theological proof.
Mm.
The sin of child sacrifice brings judgment, period.
Yeah.
Regardless of who you are.
So the final synthesis the source offers for Gaza brings the religious and political claims crashing together. Palestinians viewed as remnants of the Philistines or Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
Their alleged ancestral Moloch practices now coupled with the modern Islamic idea of martyrdom, creating what the sources call the altar of Moloch and Allah.
And finally, the discussion wraps up with the author citing a very specific and highly charged numerical observation.
Oh, okay.
They estimate that as of an October 2025 ceasefire mentioned in the sources, roughly 18,000 Palestinian casualties were babies and children. The author specifically includes this number.
18,000.
Highlighting the factor of 18 and suggesting a numerical coincidence with its relation to 666. We just note this as the authors focus on specific data points within their wider theological view.
So after all that, what does this mean for you, the listener? This deep dive really forces us to consider that maybe, just maybe, beyond the usual territorial disputes and political failures, there are these powerful underlying ideological forces driving things.
Right.
The main takeaway here is the author's core thesis, that suffering itself might be deliberately engineered and monetized.
The knowledge we've extracted here presents a really stark claim that in this deeply entrenched system they describe, life itself becomes secondary. Subordinated to the, well, ecstasy of violent death, that martyrdom is cultivated as the only path to dignity.
Yeah.
And the constant flow of victims is actually essential to keeping that political and financial power structure going.
In the source material, the authors claim that within this ritual cult of annihilation, life is just less important. Progress is impossible because, quote, progress is treason and compromise is sin. So the final question this really leaves us wrestling with is this. What responsibility does the international community bear when it funds an environment where, as the sources put it, life itself is subordinated to violent death in pursuit of what they call a fabricated nationalist cause?
The sources really challenge anyone providing support or funding into that environment. They argue that kind of action makes you complicit in perpetuating a cycle of deliberate abuse and suffering. It's a fundamental challenge to how we usually think about international aid in conflict zones.
Thank you for joining us as we grappled with these incredibly heavy, really challenging sources today. We invite you to consider, you know, what other ancient patterns might be hiding beneath the surface, driving the modern conflicts we see around the world. Mm. Really forces you to look beyond the headlines.